Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
You're listening to the smartest man in talk radio.
You're going to be listening to one of the smartest people that you probably, and you know who this guy is. It's me.
He's Jim Blasingame.
I am the smart. I am the smart. S-M-R-T. I mean, S-M-A-R-T.
The Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for being part of my day. Our website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Check it out when you get a chance. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter. Don't forget to check out our blog. Lots of other exciting things that will be coming at you very soon. Any day now, I'm going to be telling you about some new stuff that we're pretty excited about. And I think you will be, too. I think you'll find that that we're going to be having some stuff that you've never seen before. That's one of the reasons we're so excited about it. So stand by for that. Marlo Lewis is going to be with us, I promise you, any minute now. We're having a little technical difficulty getting all that put together, but we're working on that. One of the things that we're going to talk about, though, he and I are going to talk about, is something that I have been talking about now since almost the beginning of my show, since way back in, I probably didn't talk about it in 97, but I know I was talking about it in 98, and that's this issue of global warming. Now, just to review what's happened over the last several years, which I think is very important for all of us. You know, folks, I don't know if you're paying attention to the global warming debate, the national and the international global warming debate. But if you're a small business owner, if you work for a small business, you really need to start paying a little more attention to this if you haven't already been doing that. Because it's affecting you. It is impacting your life. It will impact your life. And there are many facets to it. It's not an uncomplicated issue to some degree. Some of it's pretty not really that complicated. But let me go back to review just a little bit with you to sort of bring us to the point where we are today. And I'll remind you that as you know, scientists believe that the CO2 emissions as a result of our burning of fossil fuels and other things that create gases has been collecting in the poles, up in the upper atmosphere, and has been depleting the ozone layer. You know, we have an ozone layer that kind of protects our planet from some of the more dangerous rays of and impact of the sun. And when that ozone layer thins, when it gets thin, when it starts getting depleted, which scientists believe is happening, that the ozone layer is thinning, they believe that causes more of those rays, more of the harmful elements of the sun to get into the, you know, into the earth, and it creates more heat. Another thing that happens is what they call the greenhouse effect, and that's where the heat gets in, but it can't radiate out because of the collection of these gases. And, you know, you've been in your car when it was cold outside, but you were very hot inside because the sunlight, you know, it was a sunny day, the sunlight would get into your car and you'd be very hot inside, but it was because the heat of the sunlight was allowed in, but the heat wasn't allowed out. It didn't get out. And so that's basically the greenhouse effect. And what they're saying, what the scientists are saying is that this is what they call global warming. Well, what I think, and by the way, there was an international gathering in the late part of the last decade, in the 90s, that was basically given the name Kyoto because the major meeting, the final culmination of the meeting, was in a place called Kyoto, Japan. And these were called the Kyoto Accords. And this was an international understanding, an agreement, actually a contract that countries would sign that would where they would pledge to limit emissions, to limit carbon emissions, CO2 emissions, cut back on the number of emissions that cars made, that automobiles made, and from factories and other things like that. And that if the utopian idea about this was, and I didn't mean that in a sarcastic way, but the idea in a perfect world was that if all of these countries would do this, would sign up for this, would subscribe to this, that we would cut back on these emissions, and that the earth wouldn't, that the human beings wouldn't have as much of an impact on global warming as some scientists believe that we do. And so when we come back, I'm going to bring you up to current where we are on this debate. Hopefully we'll have Marlo with us to help. Right after these messages, 20 after, I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with me. Chicago for you. Feeling like I ought to sleep. Welcome back. It's 17 till. It's 43 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the guy who can't tell time, at your service as always. It's good to be back with you as always. I'm talking about global warming, folks. I'm talking about the debate that's been raging for a long time now. You know, I actually remember people talking about global warming, you know, way back in, I guess, the 80s, maybe even the 70s. I don't remember for sure. I think maybe the earliest was around the 70s. But it culminated, as I said, with the Kyoto Accords that were signed. But here was the problem with the Kyoto Accords, folks, if you remember what I was saying a minute ago. This was an international agreement, a contract that basically was put into place, that where all of these scientists, all of these, and the UN was very much involved. The Clinton administration was very much involved. Al Gore, you know, as you know, the big advocate for against global warming these days, got a movie, written a book, et cetera, et cetera. You know all about that. He made a last ditch effort. He literally traveled to Kyoto as a vice president, and I think it was December of '98 to try to get the Kyoto Accords back on track. They were going off track. A number of countries actually did sign the Kyoto Agreement, the Kyoto Accords, that would limit the emissions in these countries. But there's some things that you need to know about that, folks. Number one, the Kyoto Agreement, which, as I say, is now the standard, basically, even though it's kind of fallen apart, it now is the standard. The Kyoto Agreement was designed so that all countries didn't have to subscribe to the Kyoto Agreement. For example, China and India weren't even required to subscribe. I mean, these are two countries that we compete with, you know, tooth and nail, and yet they weren't even going to have to do what other countries were going to have to do. And as an example, here's what the United States was going to have to do if they subscribed to the Kyoto Agreement. The United States was going to have to cut back on our emissions back to pre-1990 levels. So if we signed those agreements today, ladies and gentlemen, we'd have to back up 16 years, over 16 years of our output that with regard to petroleum. Now, what do you think that would do to our economy? Now, small business owners, you see why you and I should be paying attention to this, because with the Democrats in Congress right now, it's important to realize that you got a guy named Henry Waxman. Marlo Lewis is here. He's going to talk about it in a minute. Henry Waxman, Democrat from California, is holding hearings on this, ladies and gentlemen. But it's one thing before I bring Marlo in, I want to point out, it's disingenuous for the Democrats to start throwing rocks at anybody else in America about not, you know, subscribing to Kyoto and not focusing on global warming, because I want to point out one very important vote. I believe it was in 99, maybe around February of 99. The Senate voted. They were the body that would be voting on Kyoto. The Senate voted 98 to zip, not to have the United States subscribe to Kyoto. With that said, I want to bring in Marlo Lewis. Marlo is senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. He is the expert on this issue. Marlo, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's good to have you here. Sorry about the delay. I was bringing the audience up to date on where we've been with the global warming. I took them back to pre-Kyoto, to Kyoto. I've talked to them about, and you may have heard a little bit of it, and I was just trying to bring them up to today, which is where the Democrats are in control of Congress. Henry Waxman, Democrat, ultra-liberal of California, is in charge of that committee, and he's having hearings, isn't he, Marlo?
Yes, he is. He's having a series of hearings. And what you say is quite correct. Remember, it was the Clinton administration that negotiated the Kyoto Protocol in late November and December of 1997. And even though the Clinton administration then continued to sing Kyoto's praises through the end of the Clinton presidency, and Al Gore continued to take pride in his handiwork because he actually went to Kyoto to finish the negotiations.
I had just mentioned that. Yeah.
Yeah. They never submitted it to the Senate for a vote on ratification. And, you know, and so George Bush declined to submit it for a vote on ratification. Basically,
and other countries,
and the Bush policy are the same. The rhetoric is different, but somehow, you know, I mean, for the environmental movement, the words speak louder than the actions, you know, which is just the reverse of what it should be.
And there's a reverse
reason
of reality.
Clinton wouldn't submit it, as you pointed out, the Senate preemptively rejected this treaty back in, it was actually July of 1997. They said that if the treaty that was negotiated in Kyoto, which the negotiations were still four or five months down the road, but if those if the treaty negotiated didn't include what they called binding emission limits on developing countries like China and India, then the United States should not be part of it. But, you know, even more fundamental than that, I think, is the cost-benefit ratio, if you will, of the Kyoto Treaty.
Right.
It's all pain for no gain.
That's according
to the scientists that support it, it would make no observable difference in global temperatures in 50 years, but we'd still have to spend $100 billion a year implementing it.
Well, never mind the impact on the economy. Marlo, stand by. We've got to take a quick break. Folks, Marlo Lewis and I will be right back after these messages. Stay with me. Welcome back. It's 7 Till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with our good friend Marlo Lewis, Senior Fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute, and that's CEI.org, right, Marlo?
Correct, Jim.
CEI.org,
yep.
And I encourage you folks to check it out. You can find Marlo's work on this topic of global warming there at CEI.org. Marlo, I was just in Meadville, Pennsylvania yesterday, in northern Pennsylvania, just about 30 miles south of the lake, in south of Erie Lake. And they have a lake up there, Marlo, that's a mile wide and 4 miles long. It is the largest natural lake in the state of Pennsylvania. It's deep. It's like 800 feet deep. And guess what caused that lake? A glacier. A glacier caused that lake 10,000 years ago.
Right.
As you know, 10,000 years ago, Pennsylvania and Kentucky even was under 5,000 feet of ice. So you know what? When I hear about those glacier lakes that happened 10,000 years ago, I agree with Al Gore when he says that the Earth is warming. I agree with him.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
right.
And I'll tell you what else, Marlo. I admit that human beings are probably having an impact. Our behavior, our activities, probably having an impact on global warming. And I don't have a problem with doing things to fix it, but I got a problem with throwing the baby out with the bathwater. And the baby is the economy.
Right. No, you're absolutely right. And the proof of that is the difference between Europe and the United States right now. This is, I think, very funny, because Europe is often held up as the example, the model that we're supposed to follow, because they're so environmentally responsible, and they're much older and wiser than us anyway. Their carbon dioxide emissions are going up faster than ours.
Right.
This is amazing, especially since Kyoto, since 1997, and since the year 2000. And yet they ratified Kyoto. They're taking steps to implement it. But what's the main difference between us and Europe? Our economy is growing. We have a dynamic economy. Their economy is stagnant. And
right.
And so... Yeah, you can't throw the baby out with the bathwater, because in the long run, what you want it to do is replace old capital stock with new capital stock, because
right.
the newer stuff is always cleaner, it's more energy efficient, and it relies more on electricity and less on direct fossil fuel inputs. But to have that rapid turnover of capital stock, you need economic growth. You need a dynamic economy. It's like air pollution from automobiles. The best solution air pollution has gone down dramatically in this country, and what will continue to make it fall is the fact that newer cars replace older cars, because the newer ones start out cleaner and they stay cleaner longer. Today's average car, it emits about 99% less smog-forming pollutants than cars in the early 70s. So
you know, another thing, Marlo,
you want to get the old clunkers off the road, but if people are poor, they can't afford to do that. They can't afford to buy the new car.
Well, you know, another thing, Marlo, I asked my economist guests on the show, why is it that when oil prices go up and down, when they went up so much recently, why didn't that have a devastating effect on the economy? And here's what they said. Because, yes, it's true that we're burning more petroleum than we used to, but it's because our economy has grown, it's doubled and tripled over the last 20, 30 years, but we're burning less petroleum per dollar of GDP. So the enviro wackos won't give our economy any credit for the mileage that we've already, the improvements we've already made.
Yeah, no, that's also quite correct. It's sometimes referred to the petroleum intensity of the economy, the amount of petroleum consumed per dollar of GDP. And you're right. I mean, we're about 50% less petroleum intensive now than we were in the early 70s. And so increases in gasoline prices, although we feel the pinch, we feel the pain at the pump, it doesn't have the overall economic drag that it had back in the 70s.
Marlo, I got 45 seconds. What's Waxman going to try to do?
Well, I think what he's doing is he's holding these hearings, and he's trying to make it look as if George Bush has implemented a regime of censorship and the suppression of science and basically deception about science,
mm-hmm.
and that's the reason why we're not in Kyoto. It's all because George Bush had a clever editor in the White House named Phil Cooney, who edited climate reports, and if only this guy had not edited these reports, the United States would be on a different policy track.
Why doesn't he spend his time on something productive, Marlo? I'll have to get you back another day to answer that question. Thank you for being here. CEI.org, right?
Yes. Thank you,
Marlo. Marlo Lewis, ladies and gentlemen. He'll be back. Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. And remember, this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.